Good afternoon. I'd like to call Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Today's Tuesday, February 2nd, 2021. Let the record reflect the time is 3:30 p.m. Today we have present Vice Chair Senator Reinbold, Senator Costello, Senator Holland, Senator Kawasaki, myself, Chairman Schauer. I'd like to remind everybody, please turn your cell phones off. Staff assisting us today will be Terrence Shanigan, Committee Aide for State Affairs, Carrie Cooperrider with Senate Records, and I've got Nate Williams behind us with the LIO. Three items on today's agenda. First, Senate Bill 43, Elections, Voting, Campaign Finance, sponsored by Senator Shelley Hughes. Second, Senate Bill 25, State Government Finances Website, also known as the Online Checkbook, sponsored by Senator Bill Wilkowski. Following the hearing on SB 43 and 25, it's the intention to bring Senate Bill 39, Ballot Custody Tampering, back if we have time and the committee so wishes, and we'll continue our discussion, see if we have any updates for now. And that was previously heard on Thursday, January 28, 2021. All right, for now, are there any questions or comments from the committee before we proceed with the first item on today's agenda? Any updates? Okay. Seeing none, I would like to invite Senator Hughes and her staff to the speaker's table.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair.
Good afternoon. All right. I would like to inform the committee that I and Senator Hughes have had extensive conversations about her bill, and specifically the sections dealing with absentee ballots and voting by mail. After those conversations, Senator Hughes and I agreed that the best way forward was, for the sake of the process, we're going to introduce a committee substitute for SB 43 so that the bill would be limited in scope to campaign finance. All right. Once we get this introduction from Senator Hughes and we've gone through the sectional analysis, we're going to move to the CS for Senate Bill 43. My committee aide, Terrence Shanigan, will briefly walk us through that once we get to that point. So, Senator Hughes, when you are ready, take it away. Please put yourself on the record.
Good afternoon, members of the State Affairs Committee. I am Shelley Hughes, representing District F, and with me is my legislative intern, Riley Nye. I'm excited for him to have his first opportunity to present, and I ask that you would extend him a bit of grace. I want to also point out that we have my chief of staff, Buddy Witt, behind us. He did the research and work on this bill, so if we need him as a lifeline, with your permission, Mr. Chair, we might need to call him up. So SB 43, Elections, Voting, and Campaign Finance, would improve transparency and accountability in our finance laws pertaining to ballot initiatives specifically, as well as offer solutions to help secure the integrity of our election system in Alaska to prevent the possibility of what has commonly been referred to as ballot harvesting. I want to point out and make extremely clear that this bill is nonpartisan and provides no advantage or disadvantage to one political party over another. So the idea came from two election-related questions that I became aware of last year. And I want to point out it was pre-November 3rd, both of them. So the first part of the bill, it came to mind as through the fall I was reading Ballot Measure 2 on ranked choice voting and dark money. And one of the things I noticed was that the dark money provisions, of course, Alaskans, we don't want dark money, right? But I noticed that the proposal did not apply to ballot measures themselves. And so the first part of the bill is an attempt to rectify that oversight by making small changes which expand the dark money requirements to include all elections. I respect the voice of Alaskans, and they've stated that they want more transparency. And so this bill is an attempt to do this. I believe that this bill will complete the process of bringing dark money into the light related to all campaigns. Now, the second portion of the bill deals with absentee ballots and a subject that you have already discussed in this committee. And the catalyst for this bill, again, was not what happened on November 3rd, but it actually started in the fall in a discussion in Congress. So in September of last year, a Democrat member of Congress introduced the bill H.R. 8285, the Election Fraud Prevention Act. And if it passed, it would have required states to implement specific changes to their absentee ballot laws in order to receive federal election funding. While that bill did not pass, I believe then, as I do now, that the protection of ballots is paramount to the confidence of Alaskans in our system of representative government. This bill is not to accuse anyone of anything. It's not accusing anyone of fraud at this point, but it's a recognition that tightening of our laws would help prevent any bad actors from taking advantage of possible loopholes in future elections. The bill closes a loophole that other states have already closed, and I believe it's time that Alaska close it as well. Now, having said that, I'll reiterate what you mentioned earlier, Mr. Chairman. For the sake of our process, I've agreed to the committee substitute you mentioned that will be presented to the committee so that a bill currently before the committee would be the vehicle to any changes that the legislature decides to make to our ballot mailing system, and then this bill will then be limited to the subject of campaign finance and the expansion of the provisions of ballot measure 2. And in closing, before that Riley does the section, I'll just say, as you know, and you discussed this in a previous meeting, I believe on Friday, that elections are a cornerstone of our constitutional representative republic, and they help ensure our American form of government can continue. And because of this, during election season, we as legislators must ensure transparency and untainted funding in all elections, and in particular in regard to initiatives. Secondly, for the individual casting a ballot, it is our responsibility to ensure protection against interference by those who may have a conflict of interest. And so with that, with your permission, Mr. Chair, Riley can go over the sectional if you would like.
Good afternoon, Chair Schauer and members of the Senate State Affairs Committee. For the record, my name is Riley Nye, and I'm a legislative intern working in Senator Hughes' office this session. I will be taking you through a sectional analysis of Senate Bill 43, Version B. But before I begin, I wanted to point out that the first four sections of the bill reference statutes in ballot measure 2. Because of that, these sections would not be found in the most recently printed Alaska statute books or on BASIS. We have provided a copy of ballot measure 2 for your convenience, and I will be pointing out where in the ballot measure the section can be found for your reference as I go through. SB 43, Elections, Voting, and Campaign Finance. An act relating to campaign finance and initiatives relating to elections and voting, and relating to unlawful interference with voting. Section 1 amends AS 15-13040S to expand the reporting requirements for those who contributed more than $2,000 in aggregate in a calendar year to an independent expenditure group to include all elections, not just candidate elections. This can be found in Section 7 in Ballot Measure 2 on page 4. Section 2 adds AS 15-13074B to a list of requirements in AS 15-13065C that do apply to ballot propositions. AS 15-13074B is not a new section of law, but it was amended in Ballot Measure 2, and now this bill recommends adding this amended section to AS 15-13065C as an additional requirement for ballot propositions. AS 15-13074B is Section 9 of Ballot Measure 2, and since the specific amended language is not written in the bill, I would like to read the section for the committee and for the record. AS 15-13074B states, a person or group may not make a contribution anonymously using a fictitious name or using the name of another. Individuals, persons, or non-group entities or groups subject to AS 15-13040S may not contribute or accept $2,000 or more of dark money, as that term is defined in AS 15-13400-17, and may not make a contribution while acting as an intermediary without disclosing the true source of the contribution as defined in AS 15-13400-18. And for the committee's reference, the definition of dark money and true source are found in Section 17 and 18 of Ballot Measure 2. And SB 43 does not propose changes to those definitions. Section 3 amends AS 15-13-110K to expand the reporting requirements for those who receive more than $2,000 in a calendar year from an independent expenditure group to include all elections, not just candidate elections. This is Section 14 in Ballot Measure 2, which is found on page 6. Section 4 amends AS 15-13-400-19 to expand the definition of outside funded entity to include entities that make independent expenditures to any election in Alaska, but whose place of business is outside the state of Alaska. This definition is section 19 of ballot measure 2, which is found on page 8. Section 5 adds subsection M to AS 1520-081, which specifies who may not assist a voter in completing an absentee ballot. This section also specifies that anyone assisting a voter in completing a ballot must give their name and address and sign the voter's certificate indicating that they assisted the voter in completing their ballot. Section 6 amends AS 1556-035A to expand the crime of unlawful interference with voting to include 1. Someone who violates Section 5 of the bill. 2. A candidate, ballot measure campaign employee, volunteer, sponsor, or circulator who knowingly assists a voter in marking an absentee ballot. 3. Anyone who knowingly possesses a ballot for a statewide election that was mailed to another person, unless that person is A. an election official, B. a U.S. Postal Service employee, C. a person allowed by law to collect and transmit U.S. mail, or D. a family member, household member, or caregiver of the voter. Section 7 amends AS 1556-035 by adding subsection D, which adds definitions referenced in new subsections in the bill for the terms caregiver, family member, household member, and possess. Section 8 repeals AS 1520-800, which is commonly known as the vote-by-mail statute, and repeals AS 1507-130E3, which is a reference to vote-by-mail statute. Section 9, applicability of Section 6 is specified as after the effective date. And that concludes the sectional.
Very good. Thank you. Stand by. All right. What I'd like to do at this time is walk us through. Well, we're going to go ahead and get ready to do your committee substitute. So if you would go ahead and walk away for a moment or exit the table, and we're going to invite our committee to come up and discuss that. Thank you. Good job, Riley. First time out. And committee aide Shanigan, when you're ready, to the table. Oh yeah, hold on to it. Sorry. Yeah, you'll have a chance. Get there. Okay. At this time, we're going to go with the changes. So. Actually, we need to do that first. My apologies. I got a little off the script there. That's why we'll catch that. We'll get back to it. For Senator Reinbold, are you ready?
Yes.
To that? If you, you are ready. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate State Affairs Committee substitute for Senate Bill 43, Work Order 32-LS0253/I be adopted as the working document.
Okay. I'm going to object for the purposes of discussion. Mr. Shanigan, would you please come before we are here? Excuse me. Place your name on the record and take us through the explanation of those changes. And the committee member should have this already. This version should have been handed out to you. Does anybody not have it?
I don't think I have.
Can you check the back of the book and make sure? Just make sure he's got it. You don't, but can if you want to follow along with me for the moment. You have an extra copy. Never mind. At ease for a moment. On the record. All right, Mr. Shanigan, take us through the changes, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members of the committee. I'm not sure this is on, but my name is Terrence Shanigan, for the record, State Affairs Committee aide. The changes to the Senate Bill 43 from version B to version I are as follows. The committee substitute removes Section 5, 6, 7, 8, and 9 from the bill, and all other sections from the bill remain unchanged. With the removal of the sections mentioned, there's also a title change. That's all, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. And as the committee can see here on this one, the changes, as Senator Hughes alluded to under our discussions, were to basically try to clean up the bill, SB 43, so that it became a much tighter version with one thing, and we had some overlapping, and you're going to see another version come out of SB 39 that we'll talk about later. To try to clean this up, to prevent us from having bills that were overlapping with similar items in them. So this should make the process a little bit cleaner with those changes. All right. Do we have any questions for Mr. Shanigan from the committee? Pretty simple. Mr. Shanigan, you can excuse yourself. I'm going to go ahead and remove my objection. Are there any other objections at this time from the committee? Seeing none, the CS is going to be adopted as the committee's working document. Go ahead and like to invite Senator Hughes and her aide back up to the table. And we're going to get back to questions, the one I skipped before. Okay. We're going to skip the formality since we've already had you introduce yourselves, but you certainly can. We'll go back on the record here in a moment individually, but I did skip, unfortunately, Senator Reinbold had a question starting off for Senator Hughes, and I'm going to just start with that and recognize Senator Reinbold, and when you're ready, go ahead and your question for Senator Hughes.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, and if you don't mind, it's just a comment.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I just wanted to say thank you all very much for bringing this to the table. I'm super excited that so many of us are on the same page on so many different issues, both in the committee before us and this committee now. And I'm super excited, too, about the next bill that's going to be up. But I just wanted to first of all just say thank you. This is an issue that I haven't been working as hard. I've gotten lots of emails, and I just really want to thank you both, Senator Hughes and Chairman Schauer, for working this and all your staff. I know this is a lot of work, and I'm just super thankful for the work that you've done, and I'm really looking forward to vetting all this.
Okay, thank you. Senator Hughes, just for the record as well, when we talked about the combining portions of the bills so that we kind of cleaned it up and didn't have this overlap, one of the things that came up in the discussion, and I would like you to kind of reiterate it both for the record and for the public and also discuss this aspect of it, as you looked at, I'm trying to define maybe in the best terms, holes in the process, were there anything left that you, any issues left that you saw with campaign finance that at this point between ballot measure 2 and what you've done that would not be covered as far as disclosure and transparency so that people could see who was spending dollars and from outside the state and from inside, so there's not one individual that might be running a group that's taking money from a campaign and doing something else, or groups or anybody? In other words, the overarching question, have we achieved a modicum of transparency where at this point nobody should be able to spend money in or out of this state influencing our election that shouldn't at least have to report it so the citizens can all see that? Is there anything left that we need to cover?
That is the goal of this bill. Now, I certainly, if someone can find another loophole that we need to close, I am certainly open to it. But I think as Alaskans, we pride ourselves in setting the policy for our own state. And so part of it was the concern about outside money, that be very clear to Alaskans who might be influencing. And in some cases, you know, if Alaskans agree with that, what's coming in and the initiative being proposed, that's one thing. But I think it's important for Alaskans to have that information. And so that was the purpose of putting this forward. Dark money is not a good thing. We want accountability, we want transparency, and that's what this bill is attempting to do.
And one more time before there's another question, so you're back at the table, what exactly does this prevent? In other words, what ballot measure 2 did to summarize, and what it did not do, what does this cover, again, as we get into this baseline discussion?
Well, the true source, that definition is important. The true source is actually a real person who donated. So the contributions coming in to campaigns, we have to know who actually gave it, where they're from. And that'll help us know if is the person Alaskan, for instance, if that's important to someone. If they're not an Alaskan, that might be important to someone. But it can no longer hide under the auspices of some unknown entity, or it just provides transparency. Who gave those dollars, Mr. Chair?
And as an example, can you provide one to the committee and the public that could happen now if this provision did not pass? In other words, what would be able to happen for somebody to maybe hide their money? Do you have an example of that?
Yes, there could be an organization, an entity, for instance, headquartered in the lower 48 some way, let's just say in Portland or somewhere, and they could be collecting money from people in that state, other states, and it could be fed into something happening here, and we wouldn't know that the true source were actually non-residents, because and then the dollars, the accountability for the dollars could be go through different layers where you wouldn't know who that true source is. So this requires reporting of the true source.
And I know you got your lifeline back there, so if we get to that technical, like I said, feel free if you want to get a further explanation, just throwing that back out there. If she's covering it, great. If there's something you want to expand on, feel free.
You want to add to that?
Good.
Okay.
Okay, awesome. I have enough questions of my own for now, so I'm going to open it up to the committee. Questions? Debate?
I do.
Senator Kawasaki.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this forward. I do have a couple questions on the application and how this would work. For instance, in Section C, Section 1 of the bill, the new Item S, an entity that made more than one independent expenditure in the election would have to report all of the people, all of the individuals, and all the persons, even though it weren't targeted to the state of Alaska. And I can give you an example. The Republican State Leadership Committee, which has been active in the state of Alaska, both in the primary election and the state election, raised over $150 million over the last several years to go to various states. This was one of the states where they targeted. And so would every person that donated to the RSLC be on a list that is obtained by the state?
Thank you for the record, Buddy Witt, staff to Senator Hughes. Through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, if I'm understanding your question, correct me if I'm wrong, you're wondering the mechanics of how those items would be reported. Is that correct, sir?
Yes, through the chair.
Okay, so the section in question, Section 1, and also actually Section 3, because it has much of the same language, so I'll answer both of those in case that question comes up, will be pretty much the same answer. When ballot measure 2 was passed, the football, so to speak, was handed off to APOC to figure out those mechanics and write those regulations. So as of now, that is still being worked through. I think the importance of this bill passing now is to make sure that these provisions regarding statewide ballot initiatives are put in the queue so that they can apply those same reporting requirements and mechanics to those entities as well. Specific to your question, I would imagine, and that discussion is still happening, if it hasn't already, within APOC, that they would have to be asking themselves and then passing on information to require specific information if outside money is received for in-state campaigns, and that money cannot be received by those campaigns unless those reporting requirements are also attached, and that is for any political party. That would be, and this would be, is already specific to political parties and to political, campaign candidates. By removing the word candidate, we then just expand that so that if the entity you spoke of contributes to a statewide ballot initiative in the state of Alaska, before anyone can receive that money, if it is classified as an independent expenditure group, they would have to comply with reporting requirements first. If they cannot comply with those reporting requirements, it is my understanding that they would be in breach of the law and would not be able to accept that money.
And may I add to that, Mr. Chair?
Of course.
So we're asking those that are sponsoring a ballot initiative they will have to meet the same reporting requirements that a candidate would. So all we're doing is leveling the playing field there, and as the, you know, APOC rolls out the mechanics and what those requirements will look like. And we as we've all been candidates. We have to comply with that. So we're just asking, this would just require those sponsoring an initiative to meet that same level of reporting.
It sounds like, while you don't know a final answer yet, the answer to that may be yes. That's what I'm hearing, potentially.
Could be.
Okay. A follow-up? Senator Kawasaki?
Sure. I guess I would just need more clarification on the entity receiving the money would then have to report if they received a contribution within the 24-hour period. And they would have to know, I guess it sounds like, the entity receiving a contribution to the entity, they would have to know where they're getting the money from. And, of course, when you've got a big group like the RSLC that receives hundreds of millions of dollars over a period of time, there's going to be lots of donors. And so do they have to report every single donor who's donated that amount of money? That's what I'm sort of getting at. If that's a question more for the director of APOC, then I think that we should have Director Hebden online or maybe be able to answer that question or in the future.
We do have, for the record, Hans Zygmunt with us from the Division of Finance Department of Avon. Not sure if you can answer that question, but we could ask. Anyone? No? Based on your conversations? That's a head shake. No. Okay. All right.
Probably specific to APOC, I would think.
Okay.
But just to clarify, it would be, of course, all these entities, whether it's the entity you described through the chair, Senator Kawasaki, they're keeping records. They've got spreadsheets of all this. And so if we make this law, they would, when they would provide funding, they would have to transmit that, and they'd have to make sure they secured it. But it would only be for those individuals through source that were $2,000 or more. So somebody's, from one of these national fundraising efforts, if they're donating $25 or whatever, it's not going to be those. It's going to be those higher-priced donors.
Okay, we're going to move on to Senator Costello. But before we get to that, can you just make a note of that? And in the following testimony, we'll look at asking them to come in and or at least be online to answer those questions. Thank you. Senator Costello.
No, thank you. My question answered.
Okay. Other questions? Senator Reimel.
I think it's more of a comment, Mr. Chairman. But I feel like saying, where have you been the last 20 years? So is this your first time working on this, or had you been working at this in previous sessions, and because of COVID, like everybody blames COVID for everything right now, but is that the reason why this didn't get moved forward? Because it sure would have been great if this would have been done last year. And I once again, thank you for bringing this forth, Senator.
Actually, I wish I could boast that I started 3 years ago in 2018, like Senator Schauer, but I can't. It was really the summer and fall when I began to think about it, so.
Okay. Other questions at this time for Senator Hughes and her staff? Okay, seeing none, we're going to go ahead and set the bill aside. Thank you for coming up. You guys are welcome to stay or leave. And we'll bring it back before the committee another time. Second item on today's agenda, Senate Bill 25, State Government Finances Website, also known as the Online Checkbook, sponsored by Senator Bill Willikowski. I'd like to go ahead and invite Senator Willikowski and his aide to the speaker's table when you are ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Willikowski, welcome to Senate State Affairs. Would you and your staff please introduce yourself for the record and walk us through the bill when you're ready?
Yeah, my name is Bill Willikowski. I'm State Senator representing East Anchorage and Jaybear, and along with me today is Nate Graham from my office. And if I could, Mr. Chair, I'd give a brief statement and then have Mr. Graham go ahead and walk you through the bill or proceed as you would like.
Absolutely, go ahead.
All right, thank you. Senate Bill 25 would create a publicly searchable online checkbook for state government expenditures and revenues. The state currently, as far as we can tell, is the only state in the nation that does not have an operational online checkbook. It was taken down last year, and we've had no online checkbook since that time. Before that, the online checkbook that we had was extremely slow to download. It was very slow to operate. It was not intuitive. It was not easily searchable. And that led to us receiving a rating of F from a number of different groups that monitor access to government information. In the supporting documents, you'll see a report from the United States Public Interest Research Group, USPIRG, which rates states on financial transparency. They've given us a rating of an F in 5 out of the last 6 years. We were, as of the last rating, ranked 49th out of the 50 states in terms of the access we provide to the public on our financial information. As I mentioned, last spring, the Department of Administration removed all information from fiscal year 2020 through 2021 from their checkbook website. So we are currently the least transparent state in the United States. Senate Bill 25 is fairly easy to implement. The financial information is already collected by the state. It is just a matter of somebody spending a few hours putting a publicly searchable website together, regularly updating the information. Mr. Chairman, I've sponsored almost identical bills to this in the past. In 2009, Senate Bill 2 passed the Senate and got to the House and unfortunately did not pass. It was killed in the House at that time. And it was killed because the state said, the governor at that time said, we don't need this bill because we're doing it already. I also introduced Senate Bill 180 in 2020. Where we received a hearing in Senate State Affairs, and unfortunately, due to COVID-19, that bill did not pass. This bill provides public access to financial information, and in the past has been supported by a wide range of individuals with diverse political ideologies. In 2009, Grover Norquist and Ralph Nader testified in support of this bill. The argument against the bill is that, from what I've heard, is that it would be expensive. And I would just mention that my staffer, Nate, with zero computer experience, developed an online checkbook for the state last year in about one day, at no cost, zero cost. Now, I'm sure it was not as sophisticated. I'm sure it didn't have the bells and whistles that our IT departments at the state could do. But nonetheless, surely our IT department can do one for little or no cost. The second argument that I've heard is that the state may say, well, we plan on doing it, and so we don't need this bill. And I would just point to the fact that we have not had an online checkbook since last spring. And the one before that, as I mentioned, has received an F rating in 5 of the last 6 years. So I think this is a good government bill. Government transparency is not an ideological issue. I've heard from many people on all sides of the aisle who support this bill. This bill, I think, will actually save money because the state, in a number of ways, the state, number one, is required to respond to Freedom of Information requests. And when you don't have easily accessible, if you have easily accessible information, then someone can simply go online instead of having to put in the information request, have someone go ahead and probably several people actually whose full-time job is to just simply respond to those requests. The other thing that I've heard is from contractors and the business community, which is this gives them the opportunity to go and see what the state is spending on items, spending on projects, spending on contracts, and it allows them to better price. They can come up with terms that will save the state money. And so the business community supports it for that reason. I think this is a good government bill. It also gives Alaskans a better opportunity to understand where our expenditures are going, where the revenue is coming from. And I would respectfully request that this move out of this committee at the earliest convenience. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Wilikowski. Do members of the committee have questions for Senator Wilikowski before we get into the section analysis? So we'll start with Senator Ramble.
Thank you. First of all, I'm going to say thank you, Mr. Chairman, for hearing this bill. It is a minority Democrat bill, and I have to just, I'm going to go positive, but first I'm going to say I never got the courtesy when Democrats were in control of having a bill even heard in committee, let alone on the floor. So I first want to say a huge congratulations. This is a massive olive branch that reaching out, you know, to the minority that we like tons of you guys, and I just wanted to say that this is a super important bill, and I'm probably going to become a co-sponsor of it because let me tell you, Senator Kawasaki and I think every year for 6 years when we were in the House talked about this and tried to get this through, And it, at one time, you guys, I think Scott or Senator Kawasaki, you had this through, and it was so great. I used to get on this, and it was my favorite program in the state, I think, favorite state website, because this is where I got my cuts from, for budget cuts. So if you're talking about saving money, I can tell you I generated dozens and dozens of cuts based on what I saw in this online checkbook, which, so thank you for anybody who got this into law, because I absolutely loved it. So what my question is, I can't wait to get the Department of Administration before us, Mr. Chairman, I'm sure you'll have them. But what is the cost of transparency and public trust increasing that? I think transparency is so doggone important. And so thank you so much for this bill. It's just, it's basically just a huge thank you very much for bringing this forth. Like one thing that I may end up adding to this, you know, with the will of the body, is grading the administration on FOIA requests, freedom of information as well. I don't want to tie the bill down, but I can tell you that my staff for the last 9 years have said their number one problem that they have with their job is they can't get information. Doesn't matter if it's a Democrat or Republican administration, they cannot get information. And I can tell you I've been stonewalled pretty much the last 9 months getting very little of my FOIA requests and public records requests, and I think it's 100% unacceptable. They're breaking the law. So that's the one thing I may, you know, discuss at a future, but I just wanted to get that on the record, and I'd like to meet with you to discuss that.
That'd be great if the bill sponsor, as well as Senator Rambold, you could work that out for the committee. That would be helpful. And I do want to say for the record, again, as we discussed before, having your first name and using Bill is still getting confusing to me because we've said Bill about 30 times in this process, and I'm trying to look at you while I'm looking at the bill. Okay, Senator Costello, I believe you had a question. I apologize. I know there was one to the right. Senator Kawasaki.
I do. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for bringing this forward again. I knew you were a champion of it from the beginning. Then Governor Palin introduced an executive order making this happen. I was just curious why you thought that the previous administrations let it go over the last several years, and that it's been offline since last spring. I mean, are there costs affiliated with it that you know of? It seemed to have happened by executive order without any sort of extra tools necessary when Governor Palin introduced the executive order to create the online checkbook. So,
yeah, when Governor Palin, when this was introduced, Governor Palin was the governor at the time, and initially 2009, and she, or actually maybe it was 2007, she started an online checkbook on her own and at zero cost, I would imagine. It was taken down last spring, and I can't speak for the administration as to why. I think they're going through a change of systems, computer systems, and I think they wanted a better product. I'm sure they'll be here and able to testify, Mr. Chairman, but I really can't speak to why they took it down.
Follow-up, Senator Kawasaki?
No, but I did want to talk about the fiscal note that was attached here, and I think that the person from Division of Finance is online, so when it comes down to that
we'll hold that because I want to get to the section analysis just first so we've covered the rest. You bet. Other questions for Senator Wilkowski before we move on? Okay. I want to thank you, Senator Wilkowski, for that, and if we could have your staff this time take us through the sectional analysis, please.
For the record, my name is Nate Graham, staff to Senator Bill Wilkowski. So I'll go through the sectional, and then I created a kind of a presentation on the bill as well, if the chair would like that afterwards. But I'll start here. So Section 1 just names the act, the Alaska Online Checkbook Act. Section 2 is legislative finding and intent. Section A would establish that this bill is intended to allow people to identify and discover state revenue and expenditures. Subsection B requires that the act be interpreted in the favor of disclosure and transparency. Subsection C finds that the state revenue and expenditures must be accounted for and easily accessible to the public. Section D adopts intent that the state should strive to create a user-friendly website that gives public access to the state's financial information in a centralized location. Section 3 requires the Department of Administration to make the financial transactions of the state and the annual audit available electronically for the use of in the public internet website. Subsection 4, or Section 4, is we'll add a whole new section to the law. Subsection A requires the Department of Administration to develop, operate, and maintain a searchable, free-to-the-public website that provides financial information available from the Central Accounting System or the annual financial reports. Subsections 1 through 3 are monthly reporting requirements. They require the receipts or deposits by state agencies into a fund or account established within the state treasury, proceeds from taxes received, categorized by source type, including compulsory contributions imposed by the state for the purpose of financing services, agency earnings, including amounts collected for sales or services, revenue received for the use of state money or property, and as well as expenditures, the names and locations of any persons to whom a payment was made, the amounts of the expenditures, the type of transaction by account code, including the purpose of the expenditure, other information specified by the department, and the balance of the following state accounts: the statutory budget reserve, the constitutional budget reserve, and the permanent fund earnings reserve account.
I'm going to stop just real. And by the way, I should have caveated my apologies. If you have a question that's specific to the section, Alice, you're welcome to just let me know, and we'll make sure we don't skip it. But just for either the bill sponsor or for you as staff, I have to imagine in the discussion before, this is not an all-inclusive list. This is just overarching guidance, or it is pretty much everything you want to see included inside the bill.
Senator Schauer, this would pretty much cover everything that you would want to be included, but it's not exclusive, so they could include more information.
There could be more they may put in this, or things that are out there now that, for example, what they're working on that might be rolled into it. Would that be a fair statement?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. Any others at this time? Senator Rambo?
Well, and through the chair, just to that point, we noticed that they were globbing tons of stuff together. They should have been more descriptive in the past. I mean, we would search for just some real basic information, and it was humongous. So I actually like, you know, the more detailed information, at least, you know, and categorically, because when we were looking for specific cuts, like I'm just going to use an example that may or may not have been there, but just like fees to conferences. And it was just, everything was just lumped in travel, basically. And I mean, that might not be the best example. It's just an example, a theoretical example of potentially, I do think having some specifics would be, it's definitely more beneficial. Including the fund sources is so powerful, because when you're looking to cut a certain area, finding the fund source and just being able to pull it all up based on the fund source, I think is really, you know, let's say state funds, we want to go hammer that. It's just really good to look into that. So with that, I just want to say I agree with you fully, Mr. Chairman. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And the point, Senator Wilkowski, is kind of to that with it, is that if there's more specifics the committee or others believe they would like to see, I think we should add them. Because intent language, I think nobody here is naive, and if a bureaucracy decides it doesn't want to answer those questions, it will only go so far. So, and I'm certainly not suggesting you should have every line written down, but if there are specific areas that we feel that really are important for transparency and so that the public can see it, I would tend to lean more towards getting into the weeds and being very specific on the guidance as opposed to letting them vaguely do what they want, because we won't necessarily get what we want. So not just for what it's worth in discussion. Thank you.
And I would just, if I could, I agree completely. I agree with Senator Reinbold. We would, our preference and the intent of the bill is to make it as transparent as possible, to make it so that you can go in and find out a specific conference fee for a specific conference. That is the intent of the bill. Keeping in mind that as you get more specific, you're working within limitations from the Department of Administration. So we're trying to find that balance to keep the fiscal note down, to keep it something that's doable. But that is absolutely the intent, is to make it as specific as possible.
Understood. Thank you. Other questions? We'll continue. Please continue.
Let's stop on subsection 4. So this section states the revenues and expenditures summarized by the general fund reserve sources categorized by function, department, and account. A total general fund income compared to expenditures. Total assets compared to liabilities at the end of the fiscal year. For the preceding 10 fiscal years, the number of state employees by department, the number of independent contractors engaged by the state by department, the long-term debt owed by the state, total general fund expenditures, and all general fund payroll by department. AS 3705215B describes the reporting requirements for the previous subsection. So some are required monthly and others are required annually. Subsection C requires that the website have reference materials to assist the public in understanding the financial information provided on the website. C2 requires the website to have a feature that allows users to search for information on the website by keyword and recipient. Subsection 3C requires the site to have a link to the websites of the Legislative Audit Division. And the site must also include electronic copies of information related to state service procurement contracts, including compensation and contract length and of other information related to independent contractors engaged by the state. Subsection D requires the Department of Revenue and other state agents that use the central accounting system to provide information to the Department of Administration that is necessary to comply with this act. Subsection E clarifies that this bill will not require the disclosure of any confidential transactions under state and federal law. Subsection F defines expenditure, searchable internet website, and state agency. And then section 5 and 6 are tell us when the bill is going to be required to be in operation, and it's by October 2022 as of now.
Okay, copy. Yeah, you better be able to find it, because that's part of the problem, isn't it? Much of this information is out there, but good luck finding it. You have to go all over the place to get there, so it can be difficult as you read through it. Okay, I saw some hands, so we'll start with Senator Reinbold.
Another place I want to amend this, October 2022 is not acceptable. That's got to change. So thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, absolutely. We have no objection to that. We were, again, trying to give the administration as much time as they need. But I'd have it effective tomorrow if I could, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, thank you. Just a couple questions. So we're dealing specifically with state agencies. And the University of Alaska. University of Alaska court system typically get a sole appropriation, and then they divvy up the money. And then, of course, they come back to us with the red book on how each of the things were spent. But does the university, I guess this question more for the university, if they're able to do it or if they do it already, and I guess same with the court system, which isn't included.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, they already keep their accounting. It's not currently in the checkbook, but this bill would require them to make that information public as well, as long as it wasn't confidential, because there's a lot of confidential expenditures in the university and the court system, so they would have to sort that out to make sure it could be public.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yep. And I believe that we wanted to discuss, somebody asked, I think it was you, Senator Kawasaki, to go over the fiscal note. Was that correct?
I did have a question about the fiscal note, I guess.
And we do have Hans on the line if you'd like to bring that up at this time. We'll see if we can get him on the line. Hans, can you hear me?
Yes, I can, Chairman.
Thank you. I'll go ahead and we'll have Senator Kawasaki ask his questions or maybe a few others and put yourself on the record after he does, and we'll move forward. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you, Director Zygmunt. I did have a question about the fiscal note, which is estimating a total capital cost of over $400,000. I'm wondering if you could sort of elaborate on what that money is actually for, knowing that this was something that, again, had been done by executive order without any money in a previous administration.
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, if I may. First, by way of introduction, good afternoon. My name is Hans Zygmunt, and I'm the director of the Division of Finance at the Department of Administration. And I do want to thank the chair, the vice chair, and the members of the committee today for the opportunity to testify on this bill and answer your question. If I may ask the chairman, may I make a few opening comments before answering the question directly?
Feel free. You have the floor. Go ahead.
Thank you. Through the chair, I'd like to additionally thank the sponsor for his work on the bill and the committee for its consideration. Increasing transparency in public finance is a worthy and shared goal. The state has traditionally, through the Division of Finance, provided an online checkbook. It's a set of reports, from the Alaska Data Enterprise Reporting System, or ALDER, to provide non-confidential vendor payments made by the state to provide transparency into state expenditures. For example, the checkbook reports on what the state purchased, who we bought it from, how much, but it's not the full state balance sheet. Back in April, the Division of Finance took down the online checkbook. The division received a call about an unusually large expenditure to a legislator, which raised some red flags. After doing some research, we discovered that when information was being filtered, the fields were being misaligned and the data wasn't translating correctly. The online checkbook is expected to be back online this Friday, the 5th of February. We fixed it by creating a new ALDER report that assembles the data and as an end product that requires no human intervention or manipulation. Currently, analysis is being done to make sure that the actual numbers in the checkbook are matching all expected results and that we are in full compliance with statutes and regulations to make sure we're not sharing inappropriate or confidential information like child welfare payments or victim restitution. It took approximately 8 months to fix the challenges due to the implementation of the CARES Act, preparing the comprehensive annual financial report, and the planning and beginning of the build phase for the IRIS upgrade. IRIS, if you don't know, stands for Integrated Resource Information System. The initial root cause analysis began back in April, and it's taken approximately 300 staff hours to get to the point where we're able to republish the checkbook. The checkbook online currently differs in substantial ways from the bill being proposed. The bill includes liabilities, revenues, long-term debt for the state, information published in the CAFR, but not currently on our online checkbook. It requires revenues from the preceding month, balances for the preceding month from the statutory budget reserve, constitutional budget reserve, permanent fund earnings reserve account. It requires information on full-time, part-time employees, temporary employees, independent contractors, general fund revenues and expenditure categories by function, agency, and account, and an expanded scope of reporting to include public corporations and the universities. As it was said in the fiscal note, we estimate that it will take approximately 8 months and roughly $400,000 to implement the new checkbook. That is money that would be allocated. The reason we, as a capital expenditure, is that we would employ contractors to build the new website. If the bill is passed, it could reasonably be implemented once the IRIS upgrade is completed and stabilized, starting in April of 2022, and with a go live date, which would be roughly contemporaneous with the October 2022 date of the bill. With this said, the department and division do not take a support or not support position on the bill. Of course, a policy decision of the legislature. We're in the executive branch. We'll implement the policy decision as it's made. But as far as, you know, directly to the question of the 8 months time, when we received the language of the bill last year, the fiscal note that we filed at that time, if I recall correctly, was indeterminate. I then had some conversations with CGI, who's the company that is the vendor for IRIS, and looked at the scope of the bill and we came up with a ballpark estimate of what it would cost to build if contractors built it, and that's the number that we came up with. It's not a firm number. It's not a binding offer or anything like that. It is an estimate based on the time investment we think is going to be necessary to build a something of this complexity.
Okay, thank you for that. There's going to be some follow-up questions, I'm sure, here. I want to put something on the record. I think it's fascinating that when government, and I'm not saying that you're not wanting to do this, don't take this the wrong way, but I am fascinated by this, how this plays out. when government doesn't want to do something, it takes a long time and a lot of money. That's the estimate. But if you remember, for those of us that were old enough, in Desert Storm, Desert Shield, in August of 1990 when it kicked off, General Schwarzkopf briefed this at the time. And it is an amazing feat when you consider that we moved from the United States to the Middle East across a major ocean, the equivalent of every single brick, piece of road, building, every part of a medium-sized Midwest town. We moved it halfway around the planet, and then we moved it back. And we did that in a couple months. So the contention that often that this would take that long, I think, is probably stretching it a little bit. It's amazing what you can do when you really want to. So while, again, Director, I'm not trying to say that you guys would be stonewalling to that effect, I have to agree with my Republican and Democrat colleague that if this is something we want to get done, it can certainly move a lot faster if we can move an entire city halfway around the planet in 2 or 3 months. So for what it's worth with that. So I have a couple questions, and I'll open up back to others with this. Are there any legality requirements or obstacles that you're aware of with the bill as it is written, as far as some of these other things that we would open up to transparency? I know that the staffer that Nate mentioned, there was a couple areas of confidentiality, I believe, with university reporting and other things. Are there any that you're aware of with this bill?
Nothing with respect to confidentiality, although to the extent that revenues are being reported, I would defer any questions of confidentiality of revenues to the Department of Revenue. With respect to the university and the public corporations, those component units of the state are not, their information is not in IRIS, so they don't do their accounting in the state central accounting system, so we would not be able to include them in our reports and provide that information in the online checkbook.
Thank you. And a second question, and I apologize, this may be more for the bill sponsor or for both of you, but you had mentioned IRIS finishing, and because I'm not sure how they are either separate or could be complementary, what is the relevance of IRIS having to be finished? Is the data used from that to then fill the reporting system? How do those overlap or work together? Because that's not clear to me. Having to have that finished before we do this. So either or both of you, if you could answer that for me, please, just to help me kind of get smart on it.
To the chair, I can answer that question.
Thank you.
The IRIS upgrade works hand in glove with Alder. IRIS is the state's accounting, financial, procurement, payroll, and human resource management system. So that's the platform where all the accounting actually takes place. Alder is a reporting tool that pulls from the data warehouse where all of the information is stored from the transactions that took place in IRIS. So that's the relationship between IRIS and Alder. The reason for the timing concerns on the part of the Division of Finance, Department of Administration, And the kind of the request that this begin at the end of the IRIS upgrade is frankly resource constraints. Our resources of the technical resources, the programmers, the business analysts, the database administrators, are working round the clock virtually for the next year to get the IRIS upgrade completed. Our capacity to take this on right now is just very, very constricted. And so the timing of the bill out to October 2022 gives the department the time to finish the IRIS upgrade, do it correctly, go live and stabilize, begin this project, and then complete it with with our CGI partners to where we have a first-in-class product that looks like what I think that the senator is looking for, which is something like what the state of Ohio does, for example, and that's a great goal. We share that goal. We really want to see something like that happen, but we also want to make sure that our accounting system, which is the foundation of that information that's rolling up into the online checkbook, that is completed correctly and totally first.
Thank you, and Senator Wilikowski or staff, if you have an addition to that, that's fine. And I should have clarified. I apologize. I understand IRIS. And what the bill is attempting, I'm confused, is how they overlap or the difference between them, this versus the other one. So I apologize. I might have – that's okay. It's a good explanation for those that weren't as aware. That's what I'm trying to figure out. So, Senator Wilkowski, any additions to that?
Oh, just a couple comments, Mr. Chairman. The state stopped upgrading this checkbook about 3 years ago. They completely took it down 9 months ago. They did their COVID dashboard in 1 week. You're absolutely right, Mr. Chairman. If they put their minds to it, they can get it done. And I'm having a little bit of deja vu here because when we did this original bill back in 2007, 2008, heard the same exact thing. The Department of Administration said, we can't do it. It's too expensive. It's going to take too long. And then literally the day, they did the exact same thing. They came into the State Affairs hearing, this committee's hearing, back in 2007, 2008, and said, it's done. We did it. It's amazing. It didn't cost us anything. So I view what they say with a lot of skepticism, Mr. Chairman. We've got a great group of people working in our IT departments here. I don't know why they have to hire an outside contractor. I don't know why it's going to take them additional 8 months or a year and a half or whatever it's going to take. I'm just deeply skeptical, Mr. Chairman, of the comments and statements that I'm hearing.
Okay, fair enough. Staff, any addition to that from a technical perspective? Senator Reinbold?
First of all, I want to say I'm really glad to be working on the same side of an issue with Senator Wilkowski. It's great. I love your passion, and I have a lot of the same concerns, and I got to get a couple things on the record because they open it up wide. And by the way, we really like your commissioner, but I've got some serious comments, and concerns about what was said too. I'm done with outside contracts too. I don't know how many state employees we have, something like 20,000, or if you include the university, greater than that. But anyway, we have so many well-trained people. It just seems like we keep having to hire the private sector to do everything. So why even have so many state employees? So I can't help myself but say that. So I'd like to see this in done in-house if possible. In addition, keep the confidentiality things very, very minimum. And this is why, because I've been stonewalled by this administration. For example, I was asking for different emails between Dr. Zink and different people like Commissioner Crum. How did you guys come up with declaring this disaster declaration? Well, everything seemed to be pretty much confidential, or it took lots and lots and lots and lots of time for them to get me little scraps. When I was asking for information about the governor and things, they were saying, oh, that's client attorney general privilege. Well, I thought he was an attorney general for all of us. So I just kept getting stonewalled after stonewalled after stonewalled. So this checkbook to me is a great opportunity for Alaskans to be able to see things online. So I want to say thank you that it's coming back online, which is just pretty remarkable on February 5th. I'm pretty happy because it's just in time to start doing budget cuts, and that's something that I'm very, very interested in. But what my question to you is, Mr. Hans, is the fund source. I just think it's better to do in source because you guys know the fund source codes, you know the outgoing, you know everything. How difficult is it to put that stuff in, or is the one that's on now that's going to be back up on the 5th, are those kind of things already there?
Senator Reinbold, through the chair, no, that is not one of the enhancements that will be available on the 5th. What our intention is for the 5th is to restore what was previously delivered by the Division of Finance, but with an assurance that the data that we're presenting is accurate. That would have to be part of the enhancements that we do in the future. I'm not sure that that's a particularly difficult part of the enhancements per se. It depends on how what exactly we're doing, and I imagine what you're really looking for is tying the funding sources to where the money is being spent. So if you have dollar, X expended for purpose Y, that Z funding source is where the money came from. And I don't know I don't think that that's a particularly difficult link, but I would have to, consult with the programming staff on that to know for sure, and we can follow up.
Okay, and through the chair, this is a basic bookkeeping, elementary level bookkeeping, fund source codes. I mean, no offense, but it's very simple, and it's very frustrating, and I'll tell you why. Because for a budget, somebody wants to budget cut. In our subcommittees, we have to do this a certain way, a budget cut. Then it goes before Senate Finance, and it's a totally different process that we go through, and we have to put fund source codes. So we literally were staying up all night long doing budget cuts because what was in the checkbook wasn't there. So then we had to go back and dig for the fund source codes to rewrite all of our budget cuts, which was the same budget cut. And that's why I think this is so doggone important, and I would definitely like to work with the administration, of course, and Senator Wilkowski's office to make sure the most basic elementary things so that we can get our work done in a more efficient manner happens. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Other questions at this time? Senator Kawasaki.
Yep, thank you. Just to follow up on the question I had earlier, you mentioned a number of enhancements that would need to be made, and that's where the $400,000 capital appropriation would come from in the 8 months. So if it didn't have those, if we didn't do things like spending through state corporations, we didn't do the university, we didn't do, I can't remember what else it was. But we just did the very basics, the general fund revenue sources, the categorized by function, categorized by state agency, categorized by account, and then the general fund revenue versus expenditure, would it just have a zero fiscal note at that point?
Senator Kawasaki, through the chair, I don't know if it would be a zero fiscal note, but it certainly reduces the cost. That would take me a little bit of analysis to know for sure. But to the extent that limiting the amount of work that we need to do on the technical side, that makes it an easier lift for us and certainly does reduce the cost.
Follow up.
Yeah, I'm just trying to figure out where the $400,000 and 8 months comes from and where that, what are we really adding that isn't already available that is the costly part? And, if we have to forgo the part on corporations, just saying if we did and that's where most of that came from, then, maybe we have to do that just to get the major parts that we really want to see available to the public. So I kind of want to tease out this analysis of the fiscal note, maybe at a later time, and I can also take questions offline.
Author check. Hold on a second.
Thank you, Senator. Through the chair, we are happy to have those discussions with you.
Thank you. Senator Wilkowski, because I don't have it on the top of our head here, do you remember which committee this goes to next?
Finance.
Well, thank you. That should be it then, just the two referrals. So, Director and four committee members as well, fire your questions, please, our way, because there's obviously several that are out of this based on timing, the cost development, maybe even in steps doing this where you got one thing done and maybe we could step it out to multiple parts of this with time. I do agree with all of my colleagues here that, and based on the example I gave, I don't see how this could take that long to do. It just doesn't seem to make sense. It feels like a little bit more of a we just don't want to do this or something to that effect. And that, Director, don't take that the wrong way. I'm not saying that you're purposely doing it, but I think you can hear pretty clear angst from every committee member with frustration and some of this going back for over a decade. So, and I have to agree that a tighter timeline only makes sense for this based on the testimony we've been given so far. So I think you can expect to see that kind of direction from this committee as we come out of it. So please get us your questions. We'll try to get those answered. We'll send them that way. Other testimony as well. If you want to see somebody else come here, we'll certainly ask for them to get them in front of the committee so we can ask these questions. Happy to do so. I think we all agree this is something that's very important, not only for the legislature to use, but also for citizens so that they can see what their government's doing. We've been talking about transparency for some time. We need to achieve that. Okay, other questions from committee members at this time? Seeing none, we're going to go ahead and set the bill aside, but I just want to make clear on the 10, I'm not going to sit on this one for very long. I intend to keep this one moving, but I'd like to get these questions answered first before we send it to finance. We'll bring it back for the committee as soon as we can get these questions answered. Thank you to Senator Wilkowski and Mr. Graham. We're going to continue. You guys are cleared off.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members.
Thank you. Thank you. All right. Looking to the third item in the agenda, SB 39. We don't have additions yet because we're working to scramble to get the questions answered, one, and the expert testimony for next week. That's the timeline we're on. But while we had it on there just so that the public has heard it, I wanted people to know that at this point we just want to see if there was any other questions or something that anybody wanted on the public record before we get to those. And if there are, we'll ask them. We can go through that now. Otherwise, we're going to continue to set it aside on Thursday, which I'll talk about in a minute, we have a whole nother docket. And so a lot of our time will be focused next week on SB 39 with the expert testimony, et cetera, and getting to the questions that you've asked. So that's for the public record and for the committee members. Thanks, Senator Kawasaki. Had your hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess just to restate, I would really love to have the Lieutenant Governor before us, and I know that maybe he declined in the past, but the Lieutenant Governor is the person who's in charge and accountable on the elections issue, along with the director who knows sort of the groundwork that she had to do. I'd love to see both of them before this committee.
Senator Kawasaki, we will ask the question again. As I told you last week, I did ask and was told no. But we will certainly extend the offer, and I believe it should be no problem, most likely, getting the Division of Elections Director and others, again, that you feel that you'd like to be able to ask. We are certainly, like I said, we're not afraid of the debate. Let's get him out here and let's ask the questions. So, but I will ask that one again and see if we have a meeting soon with him before next week, so we'll try to do that. Senator Rumble.
Mr. Chairman, this is so cool. This session so far has gone really smoothly overall, and I want to say I have to completely agree with Senator Kawasaki. I'm asking that. I really want him to come before our committee as well, so I'm absolutely going to back that. And I also want to have a thorough investigation of who hacked the data, who hacked, in regards to the people's records that were violated, and the word immediate in this bill is really important to me. When there is a data breach. I think, again, transparency and disclosing, since we're on that topic, is super, super important. And then, Mr. Chairman, I'm also going to make a request that I'm not sure how this happens, but I also would love to bring Judge Crosby before the committee, and I'm not sure what the protocol is in regards to that, but it was pretty remarkable that she struck down our bill. And I think if one branch of government can just come and hack our legislation off, I think that at least we should have the opportunity to bring them before the committee and ask, because there is checks and balances in government. And to me, if they can do that, then we certainly have the opportunity. We should have the opportunity to ask the tough questions.
It's a question we were asked, Senator Rambold. I have not asked that question yet, so I'll have to see where that one goes. Other questions at this time? Senator Kawasaki.
Yeah, sorry. Just one more really quick question. There are a lot of people that are sending us emails. I'm sure you've gotten some on both sides, and I was just wondering, because I know that those folks are interested in speaking to and against this bill or just elements of the bill, and when there would be public testimony open for those folks.
It will be, and we just haven't determined that time yet, but we will absolutely give them plenty of notice, because I would expect a pretty robust public testimony period for this particular one. So, but it would absolutely happen. We're not skipping it. Senator Rambo?
I'd like to make one more comment based on what Senator Kawasaki just said. I think the media twisted this bill, and I think it's completely unfair. And I think that we need to make sure that if we do get testimony, that it's not based on an erroneous reporting, of what the bill does or does not do. I found that disgraceful. That I think that this bill is very good for Democrats, for Republicans, for both parties, and the way that this was slanted in the media is very concerning, and I'd just like to make sure that somehow gets on the record, even if it's in this committee, because I think people have a very wrong impression of what this bill actually does. And with that, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah, thank you, Senator Rambold. You will certainly have your chance on all sides of stock, because I'm not going to eliminate anybody from that. I would reiterate, based on that comment, as I said last week, what I find fascinating is while we were working on this bill, it was at a time when one side of the political spectrum of this country was upset about the election from 4 years previous, and now the other side is upset, and we find ourselves in the middle of this going, well, all sides are upset, so why wouldn't we work on making it better? But we'll see where it goes. That's why we're debating it. So we will see where it ends up. Okay, thanks for your comments and questions. Next State Affairs Committee meeting, I'm going to slow it down and quit doing dozer speak a little too fast, will be on Thursday, February 4th, this Thursday at 3:30 p.m. We will hear SJR 5, Constitutional Amendment, Appropriation Limit, Budget Reserve, SJR 7, Constitutional Amendment, State Tax Voter Approval. Those are two of the governor's bills on the constitutional level. We'll go through those. Seeing no further business at this time, I'm going to let you go early today. We're going to adjourn at 4:44.